On today's episode, I have Don Berger, an American Israeli entrepreneur and investor, the founder and former CEO of Social Tables. And if you've been one day in events, you've heard and most likely used Social Tables for your events, which he sold to Cvent in October of 2018. Prior to Social Tables, Don worked in management consulting and served as a member of Congress. A little fun fact segue over here. I've been an early adopter of Social Tables. I think it was probably 2013 because it truly did fill such a void as an easy to use cloud-based diagram building software, not just for, you know, banquets and events, but even for AV, which is probably not what Don had in mind when he first came up with the concept, but we'll talk about that later. For now, let me also say that I'm quite proud to not have mispronounced his first name when we first met right when he moved to our area, which apparently a lot of people do. Anyway, anyone who knows Don knows that he is an entrepreneur at heart. And so he's always working on some project, one being a book about operating companies and building communities that was scheduled to release in 2020, but I guess Corona and the move to Idaho kind of put a damper on that deadline. So we'll have to find out where he's at with that. He's also exploring a few entrepreneurial endeavors here locally. And one thing is for sure, in the, I don't know, short months that he's been here, he hasn't lost any time building and getting plugged into this community. He was wired to do from his very first Clubhouse in a treehouse. Yes, Dan, I know about that. And he is driving innovation and making a difference in so many different ways. So how about I stop rambling on and instead I invite Dan in and let him talk about what he's up to and his current project. Hey, Dan, welcome to the show. Where is...
Hello.
Oh!
I love doing stupid shit. You know, it just makes me laugh. Makes most people very uncomfortable, but it makes me laugh.
I love it. Well, somehow, I don't know how I managed to convince you to be with me today. I don't know, I guess. Is it putting my eyelashes? Did that work or not really?
I'm just unemployed. I have nothing to do. So I'm excited to do something.
I'm actually so excited that you're here. And I guess the first question I'm going to start with right off the bat, because you don't have to do a lot of Google search on you, Dan. There's been a lot of articles that have been written about you, and you left such an incredible legacy behind, not only in what you built as Social Tables and the impact that you have made in the startup community in DC, but in the entire Social Tables team that you have put together. So because there's so many introductions about yourself, I want to ask you, if you were to do it, what would Don Berger say about who he is and what he's up to these days?
It's funny you ask that because I'm working through a process right now to find words, better words to describe what I do, because I often struggle in describing what I do. I think if anything, the two words that come to mind are community organizer. And that is true in terms of my investment thesis, where I put my money. My portfolio includes hotels, restaurants, a local coffee company, and so on. Those are community-centric products. Social Tables was kind of a meta company to doing that. I mean, it was event software, and events are really communities. So, and I love bringing people together. So whether it's my backyard that I'm currently looking at and the entrepreneur events that I host here, or whether it's being the co-chair of Boise Entrepreneur Week, it's all related to community organizing.
Or building a treehouse to host
there. Yeah, it all started when I was a kid and my mom found a pellet. So like she hammered that to a tree. She said, my mom built me a treehouse, hosting friends in my own little hotel room, I guess, or something.
I love it. No, I bet probably people were like wondering what's happening over there.
Yeah, just some kids drinking chocolate milk and eating pretzels.
That's awesome. Well, here's one thing that a quote that I've abused in the last week or so because it was so awesome. And it's yours. It says, you said something along the lines that if COVID hasn't changed you, you're doing COVID wrong. And honestly, I couldn't align more with that because it's been some super stressful times that we all navigated through. And some of us, maybe they're still navigating through. At the same time, I feel like it has certainly presented itself as an opportunity as well as a way to reevaluate different aspects of our own lives and parts of our lives and determine, are those parts still in line with what we really want and need? So I guess my question to you is, what are some of the things you felt like were the hardest to evaluate as you're looking back at your 2020?
Yeah, I think the self-help industry was doing so well because it sells change to people. Change your eating habits, change your fitness habits, change your work patterns, whatever, become a better person. There's a reason why it's a multi-billion dollar industry. But what I find interesting, and this is not my research by any means, I read it somewhere, true change happens at an energetic level. So in other words, you can't just say, I'm going to start the routine of getting to places on time or eating healthier without a deeper energetic change. And for me, that energetic change, which is kind of still happening, has been twofold. The first is I decided to change where I live, which is an energy change. I went from a hustling and bustling city, first New York City, then DC, and I was going to go back to New York, but I moved to Idaho. So I went from like an East Coast kind of big city to a Pacific Northwest small town, so to speak, at least in terms of what I was comparing it to. So that's my first energetic change. The second one was really I'm working on just slowing my brain down. And that's been a combination of some new age shit like neurofeedback and meditation. So those two things put together are how COVID changed my 2020 and thus my life trajectory.
As you were mentioning, it's probably a change that is happening as we speak, right? Because nothing just happens overnight. It takes some time. It's a process. And nothing speaks more of that process than the process of growth and going through things, right? What I asked you, I remember we were getting coffee and I asked you something in person. And with social tables having been such a huge part of your life and your identity, I want to hear this answer again, just because I think you will really benefit our listeners. And the question is, how were you able to separate yourself from that identity once you made the decision to leave it all behind and build a new identity that's more defining of who you are now?
Could you remind me what I said?
No, it's a brand new answer.
That's a great question.
You have to tell me a brand new answer now that I can tell you.
What I said?
Well, usually don't they say like the first thing that comes to your mind should be the right answer?
Your spirit is usually talking when it's first.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think the first thing that you said was, well, it can't be my identity. It's not who I am. It's like it wasn't part of my identity. It was what I was doing. That's not who I am.
What was the reference?
The reference was, who's Don Berger now that there's none of that hustling and bustling?
So a lot of people, when they sell their business, they say, oh my God, I sold my baby. I can't believe it. And I think that's certainly something I felt. But I think a lot of people who say that, they actually don't know what their values are and where they get joy and why they do what they do. For me, while I miss being the leader of a 150 person small nation, social tables, and having a constituency of 6,000 customers worldwide, not to mention 30,000 users on a monthly basis, and I miss that, I know who I am to the point that I know why that brought me joy. That brought me joy because I was able to have an impact through the communities we brought to life, both at the office and at the people that use our software. So I'm still getting a lot of that fulfillment through the things that I do post social tables.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy running a company because I brought people together at the office and we helped people create better events. And I do that now through bringing, the entrepreneur community together or bringing entrepreneurs together here or investing in businesses that I believe are going to have an impact. So I'm doing really the same thing I did social tables, but in different ways. But that being said, it takes time to, a lot of people don't do the work, I think, right?
Yeah.
To really understand what it is that brought them the most joy so that they can continue doing that in different ways once they sell their business or once they move on from their identifying job.
So you're basically, your mission never changed. You're still on the same mission. It's just the maybe avenue through which you accomplish that change, and now it just took a different shape and form.
That's exactly right.
I love that because I feel like a lot of people do, especially 2020, what it meant for a lot of people losing whatever their jobs, their businesses, a lot of the things that they invested themselves into wholeheartedly, right? And you can't blame people for doing that. Actually, if you've got something that you want to do, you better do it with passion. But then when they lost that, they felt like a part of them, a part of their identity was lost with it. So grieving through that process, it has been a really hard journey. And if there's, I don't know, any tips that you want to give to someone that maybe still going through that process, what would you say? What would be something that's super helpful to navigate or something like that?
So for me, the most probably impactful exercise was, Simon Sinek, who wrote the book, Find Your Why, really geared towards companies. People don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. So figure out why you do it. A lot of people say what they do, they don't say why they do it. That was pretty successful. And then he's like, well, I'm going to write this thing for individuals. The book was Start With Why. And then he wrote Find Your Why for individuals. And then he's just got like pretty much like a framework for how to do that for an individual. It's basically like tracing the things that have brought you joy throughout your life. And what I found is that bringing people together and for helping them find a sense of belonging through community is something that I really enjoyed. And that helped me figure out my own why statement. Mm-hmm. And that's been pretty enlightening.
Yeah. So Reggie, the, you know, Cvent CEO and founder, said about you that you left an incredible legacy behind in this community that you built, and not just in social tables, but also in the startup community in DC, the team that you put together. And you obviously leave that, and you have been a huge believer of this concept of building community. And that seems to have been your why for creating communities that give people a stronger sense of belonging. So I guess, how does one build this type of incredible legacy, and what are some of the secrets that people should know about or follow? Because we're talking so much about community, especially in this hybrid new reality of events.
Yeah, I think the truth is there really no secrets. I mean, the key is to just do what you're doing publicly, transparently, with accountability. I think it's just about laying out the process for building a community and the values that the community will have, just very openly and transparently. So I think at Social Tables, what I now realize I did well, I didn't realize I was doing it all the time, was be very thoughtful and deliberate about how we built the culture that we had. And by the way, I don't think that that playbook applies in a post-COVID world. So I don't think there are any secrets. But my point is that, you know, what we did is very simple. I would just kind of like put myself out there. I said, this is what I believe. And I talk about this as public, like how we created our company's values. You know, it was open-ended. We said, you know, what values do you want this company to have for the first 20 employees? Everybody wrote some values down on post-its. We kind of went through a process of bringing that together. We then put a process in to revisit those values every 18 months. And then we had ways of testing for culture fit during interviews and so on and so forth. It was just about very deliberate community building practices that ended up serving us quite well. I'm not sure that that's what people want now post-pandemic in a workplace. I think they just want a place where they work, make money, and then leave. But that's what worked for us. I think generally speaking, communities, the word is thrown around a lot. Mm-hmm. And people use it to describe Eastern Europeans in the diaspora, or like world Jewish population, or like the North End, which is where I live, like the North End neighborhood. Those are not communities. Those are associations and affiliations. Communities have to have more than one qualifier in order for them to actually have a common thread for their members. So for example, it might be Eastern Europeans in the diaspora in Boise.
That happen to love sarmale, which is like an Eastern European food.
Perfect. Yeah, if you don't like sarmale, you're cool. Or it might be not just like LGBTQ. It's queer folks who happen to mountain bike in Boise, whatever. It has to be specific, yeah, because that allows for a connection that goes deeper than superficial ones. So I think at Social Tables, it was, you know, as I think about it, it was probably like, it was people who love technology that brings people together, mm-hmm, that live in DC. That's probably like kind of the phrase. And I'm just thinking about it for the first time. But it wasn't just anybody. Because if it was anybody, what do they say? Like the secret ingredient to like a good meal is love. It's the same thing. It's like the secret ingredient to like great software is love, and like love for what you're doing.
So for the Social Table community that you build, I mean, we love communities at work. Could you say that all those people that were there were also friends off the clock, or were there, they're serving a purpose goal to move this vision forward. But then when they're on their own, they're like, okay, well, I'm not really that good friends with Don to hang out for years later.
I hung out with a lot of employees, and then I tried to stop doing that. I don't think that was a good practice, mm-hmm, per se. So yes, I would say that one metric, so to speak, of whether or not, you know, this is actually published research by Gallup, that retention is closely linked to whether somebody has a best friend at work. And actually there's the flip side of that, which is where people have a clique at work, and that becomes alienating to a lot of their coworkers. And we actually had to fire 5 employees who had a clique that damaged our company. They disparaged over 50 employees on Slack. They colluded to sabotage some of our internal and external, mm-hmm, surveys.
So they were definitely on a mission to cause some trouble.
Yeah, it was like a mean girls crew. And actually, there's a Harvard Business School case study on us. It's called Fresh to Table. Instead of Social Tables, they call it Fresh to Table.
Interesting.
It was like Jason Hamburger or something like that. It's kind of close to my name, but not really. So So anyway, so there's a downside. That's my point. There's risk. When you bring people who are so close together, they start talking shit about their coworkers. That's the downside. But I would say a good barometer to whether you're doing is whether people are hanging out outside of work. And oftentimes it can feel, a lot of companies try to do this by like putting together these groups inside the company. And oftentimes it can feel artificial and inauthentic.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've seen that over the years, you know, marketplace or even contracting with different teams and different companies. And when you feel like the outsider, you feel like the outsider.
Yeah,
and that's true of many other places, not just the workplace, but it could be anywhere else, like communities of like friends, churches, whatever. You can feel that. And it's never healthy. It's always like has a little bit of that, like, oh, something is rotten here. It's not good.
Exactly. And it could also ruin, you know, diversity and inclusion initiatives when you're trying to find. But that being said, like, look, people want to be with people whose companies they enjoy. And that can be because it's intellectually stimulating. It can be because they have a laugh with them. It can be because they learn from them or they teach them. There's many reasons why people want to work with one another, and it's important to have a balance.
Absolutely. Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. To find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable, go to trifanevents.com. Now, let me segue this conversation into something that I would love to touch on today. This is something based on some of previous conversations I've had with other event professionals. And it's funny that some of the research says that a significant chunk of event professionals, I think it's a little bit over 30%, as we move into this new era of hybrid events, they don't really have a crystal clear idea of what a hybrid event actually is. And there's a little bit of confusion around the definition and the structure of this model. And I guess my question to you is, what is a hybrid event? What does it have to have to begin with, in your own words? And is there value in delivering this type of hybrid event model moving forward as the industry has to move forward? Because, I mean, we don't live in the past.
Yeah. So let's take your question in segments. So the first one is, what is a hybrid event? A hybrid event is an event that is simultaneously available for participation. I didn't say attendance, participation to both an online and an offline audience at the same time. The way to measure whether your hybrid event is real or not, if it's not real, it's just a live streamed live event, is to see whether your audience segments, online and offline, adding value to the other segment. In other words, if offline participants are learning, collaborating, interacting with the offline ones and vice versa. So it's like a 1+1=3. Online audiences interact with offline audiences and offline audiences interact with online audiences. And right now there's a silo, right? People online are just in chat room screaming or asking questions or just watching, you know, kind of like lurkers, while the offline people are having all the fun. So the real challenge for, or the real opportunity, I should say, for next generation of event tech technology is how do you integrate, seamlessly integrate online and offline audiences so they can add value to one another.
So basically, it's safe to assume that for a successful hybrid model to be successful is you have to add value regardless which part of the segment you're at. You're
Correct.
Partaking it.
Right.
And how do we deliver this in a way that value is added and created in this hybrid event model?
Well, I mean, it requires a significant investment in offline technology like screens and digital assets and whatnot. So for example, having screens that are not just showing the stage and not just showing the presentation, but also showing the online interaction, the upvoted questions, a way for the in-person questions to be transcribed to, you know, they have to be put in the same format. So if you're trying to upvote audience participation, you need to be able to kind of translate it into the same digital question. So if I'm asking in this mic, it has to be transcribed in real time through live captioning so the offline audience can upvote and vice versa. A way to create meeting rooms that have for one-on-one appointments where I can interact with a digital screen where there's somebody there on the other end. Those are just two examples of ways to do that. But it requires a tremendous amount of integration and a lot of offline technology, money, people. It's not easy.
So you think that this experience technically is going to be pretty difficult to be created on a lower budget?
Yes. I mean, and that makes sense because think about it. Apart from the fact that there's just a heavy cost, I mean, you're basically opening up your distribution to a global audience, whether it's your speakers, your sponsors, your vendors, or your participants. They're available to you from every corner of the world. And it's an investment in your future event because it provides value, immediate value, to people who may not be able to attend live at first, right? Virtual audiences are leads for future live audiences. And you just need to take a multi-year approach to evaluating the true revenue you can generate by doing hybrid.
So you have to have a really strong why for doing that in the first place to justify the higher cost of production, of integration, and of all the things that go into making it a successful experience for both audiences, because you don't want to treat the different segments as different people and not bring value, right?
Correct.
So let's just take a smaller event then. Someone that's like, hey, we still want to do this. There's lots of fundraisers and corporate events out there that they're looking at third quarter of 2021. And they're like, well, you know, we've done this virtual thing. It was fun. But now we really want to get in person, like maybe in a smaller capacity, smaller numbers, but still, you know, expand to reach a wider audience. Will they be able to create this experience on a lower budget if they don't have that type of budget that most larger events would have?
Yeah, I mean, the way to do that would be to choose one category.
It's most important.
Yeah. So if nonprofit fundraisers, they're like, well, we want to fundraise. I would actually not start with fundraising. I'd start with something else. Maybe it's impact. Maybe it's storytelling. Maybe it's the volunteer component. Whatever it is, I would not start with the fundraise because that's obvious and feels exploitative a little bit. And just kind of start translating to hybrid piece by piece, kind of doing it bite size.
This other question that I have, because it has to do with, you know, the entrepreneur in you, as you look at this hybrid event model, what does that look like from a business point of view?
I mean, it's super exciting. There's opportunities. I think hybrid, virtual, and then hybrid, I think are exciting because if you have a virtual event, and by the way, we've been doing virtual events for 2 decades.
It wasn't 2020, yeah. For sure.
Exactly. The webinar has been a virtual event, and I've been on Zoom meetings before 2020.
Before so people knew the name of Zoom, like what's that?
I was on Skype and there's been chat rooms and whatever. So anyway, that being said, so virtual opens up an opportunity to truly track the attendee experience and measure the interactions at every point. A live event is really a leaky bucket for marketers. You don't know what people are looking at. You don't know where people are going. You lose people left and right. You make assumptions. You rely on surveys. They're just not reliable. The app is probably the best thing to do to understand some user behavior, but a lot of people don't download the apps. It's between 30 and 70%, right? Depending on the audience. So I'm excited about virtual because it actually owns the data story and the audience journey and the user experience, so to speak. But a hybrid event opens up the door to actually monetizing in new ways. And I think that you can reach smaller sponsors who can't afford the expenses of a live event. So there's definitely more room at the kind of mid-market and maybe SMB portion of your industry. Mm-hmm. But it also just adds more units for sale from a sponsor perspective, right? The amounts of units for sale for monetization are limited. You can make donation where you can make donation based attendance a thing. So different people can join for different price points. Just so many opportunities. And again, a lot of people tend to like just go crazy with all these offering different SKUs and products and ways to monetize. Just experiment and find the things that are most authentic to your event.
Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned something that goes kind of like against the current when it comes to sponsorships and opportunities for sponsorships with virtual and hybrid events, because a lot of event professionals don't realize what a great opportunity that is just because of this data that now is available to be used in your advantage. And the main complaint is, well, we don't have enough to offer our sponsors with the virtual or hybrid event, where it couldn't be far away from the truth. How many opportunities are there if you just look in the right place to explore what those opportunities might look like outside of the box?
That's exactly right.
Well, then how about stuff that you're working on right now, the book that I mentioned? Where is that? Like, when is that coming out?
So I got the book. I mean, it's here. Book's right here.
Okay.
Finished writing the draft, working with the team to finalize it, hoping the summer. I'm really trying to find a way to integrate some of my thoughts on events and hospitality into the story of Social Tables, which sounds obvious, but it's not. So anyway, that's the inside baseball. I got the book coming out. I don't spend a lot of time on it because it's kind of out of my hands now. I spend like most of my time talking to entrepreneurs, investing in interesting opportunities. I've put $250,000 of worth of money into work in Idaho just over the past 6 months, four different businesses. So yeah, I'm investing in other entrepreneurs. I'm investing in myself, giving myself a lot of space to think and slow down, which I spoke about earlier. That's helpful to me. I'm excited for my friends to start coming to Idaho to see where I now live. Excited to start traveling again. Nothing really big to announce other than obviously co-chairing a Boise Entrepreneur Week. It was called Boise Startup Week for the last 6 years. And the team, the three co-chairs, I'm one of them, just decided to rename it in order to increase the tent size. So Boise Entrepreneur Week, the week of October 18th, and super excited to co-chair that and expecting about 4,000 people.
That's exciting. I'm excited about that just because I happen to be in the area.
and
be a tiny entrepreneur that would love to partake in that and learn from other bigger entrepreneurs that have lots of stories to tell and share.
Just so you know, I was just going to say that unlike other years or unlike other conferences, which are really based off of like kind of talk at workshops and education sessions, this is a very different conference. We're actually moving to a much community model where it's going to be around just getting people together and providing opportunities for people to meet authentic and natural ways. So for example, instead of like going to a classroom to learn how to fundraise, it might be like a trail walk where you get paired with different investors. But instead of like some talk about how to do marketing for direct to consumer, it might be like marketers gym hours where you can go to the gym and work out with other people who are doing the same thing. So it's going to be a community model event as opposed to an education model event, although we'll still have plenty of education.
That's awesome. I'm actually interested and curious how that's going to be implemented, like practically, because it's exciting.
Great question. Don't know yet.
I love it.
Excited to bring that to life.
That's awesome. Well, then where can people find you?
They can. I'm in hiding.
You're hiding. I don't want to tell anybody, but really,
where can you not find me? I'm pretty much everywhere.
I know, right?
So it's like borderline obnoxious. The best place to find what I'm thinking is Twitter, and the best place to find what I'm doing is Instagram.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for this time together. It was great that we managed to do it and we didn't have too many distractions. I mean, we did try to contain it, but it was fun. Thank you. And I look forward to seeing you around town.
Definitely. Thank you, Anka. This was a ton of fun.
All right, everyone, this was great. And I am excited that I got to talk to Dan about his many projects and how he's being doing, moving in our corner of Treasure Valley. And this is it really for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the very end. If you found today's information helpful, please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite listening platform and stay up to date with all of our future podcast episodes. Feel free to screenshot the podcast, share it on social media, and tag us, Event Demystify Podcast. Oh, and by the way, this is our new Instagram handle, Event Demystify Podcast. I would so appreciate if you showed up and show us some love by following our brand new account and spread the word to get the podcast in front of more listeners like you. I really enjoy and welcome your feedback as well. So keep that coming either via direct messaging on Instagram and Facebook or via email at podcast@trifunevents.com. Have a fabulous rest of your day. Until next time.